still the first thing there. The new thing about is it is now downloadable as a Word document. I just learned this yesterday. So we're hoping that this means people will continue to get it out. It costs a lot to print. Now, I'm going to move right on to our speakers, who we've already taken some time from. Briefly, we run until 10:30. Our first presenters are Shane and Ann, and I will let them introduce themselves from Sacramento Society for the Blind. You all know about their wonderful, wonderful senior impact project that they've had over the years. Very innovative program. We can all learn from it. Secondly, we will have Carol Sewell, who I'm so happy to have someone from the California Commission on Aging. This is a valuable local resource for us. Carol will come on a little after 9:30, since we've taken some of Shane's time here and Ann's time. And finally, we're all interested in the Older Blind Program, Department of Rehab, Title VII, Chapter 2. If I got it, no, that's right. And things are always changing with that. We are really happy to have Joe Xavier and Joe Smith, who has come back to help out in their hour of need. And we'll be finished at 10:30, and Bernice and her program, CCCLV, come on. So with that, here is Shane.
Thank you, Bonnie. Can everyone hear me all right? Good morning. How are we doing so far? Very good. Well, I appreciate Bonnie having invited Ann and I to come here this morning and speak to you. As she said, it's an opportunity for those of us in the blind and vision-impacted community to come together and share our thoughts and experiences on life as individuals dealing with vision loss. So it's a super thing that we can come together like this. I'm going to spend some time this morning giving you an overview of what's going on with Society for the Blind. Most of you probably know that Society for the Blind is a local nonprofit agency that's been serving folks in the blind and low vision community since 1954. So we've been around a while. And in fact, next year, 2014, marks our 60th anniversary. And that's an exciting thing for us. We're planning on a speaker series to commemorate that, some other special events to highlight that milestone for us. We're an organization that's undergone a lot of growth and changes, especially in the past 3 years. In March of 2010, we left our longtime 4,000 square foot building on 24th Street and moved into a 24,000 square foot facility downtown on S and 13th Street, just about five blocks from Capitol Park. And that has allowed us to expand programs, hire more instructors and support staff, and to increase our capacity to serve folks who can benefit from our services. So a lot of great things going on. And this morning, given the shortness of the time I have, I'll limit talking at length about anything except those programs that I think are most of benefit to folks who are older adults dealing with vision loss. And so Society for the Blind does have programs and services for all age groups, youth, working age, adults, and seniors. We have an Access News program, which I'll talk a little bit more about. We have a retail store that sells blindness and low vision aids. And we're doing some pretty exciting things in the low vision clinic area. Some of you, has anyone heard about UC Davis's implantable telescope for folks with macular degeneration? Okay, well, I'll tell you a little bit more about that and how Society for the Blind is involved with that amazing procedure. Society for the Blind's Low Vision Clinic is in partnership with the University of California Davis Medical Center Ophthalmology Department. The implantable telescope is essentially that. For those of you that may have experienced cataract surgery or know people that have, that involves removing the eye's natural lens, which has grown foggy, replacing it with something that's very much like a contact lens, a small plastic lens. The telescope is very similar to that, except it involves two lenses, one on top of the other, with a little bit of space between them, just like a telescope. And it enables folks with macular to see much better than any other treatment or procedure so far has been able to do. So it's really an amazing thing. So what the Low Vision Clinic does is it assists in the process of evaluating candidates for this procedure. And they performed 6 of these so far, and the results have been pretty terrific for the folks that are getting these devices. So we're very much glad to be a part of that process. Our Access News program that I mentioned is a news service whereby individuals can call by phone into our Access News, our Access News Center, and listen to news and other media that's been recorded by volunteers who come in. We actually have a recording studio at the agency where volunteers come in, and they read excerpts from local and national publications, everything from the local newspaper like the Sac Bee and the Sac News and Review, all the way up to the Wall Street Journal, popular magazines like People and Sports Illustrated and Scientific American, all of these read by real-life folks to provide access to those kinds of media in an audible format. And it's free. And so folks who are members of the service can have the convenience of dialing in to hear, as I say, everything from magazine and news to old-time radio programs, the Green Hornet, George and Gracie, all kinds of great stuff, and it's free. In fact, all of our services are no cost to the individuals that take part in them. So we'd like to make that clear to know that everyone who wants to participate and receive services, it doesn't cost them a dime. Our senior program, and the senior program is the one I manage, also known as the Senior Impact Project. This is part of the Older Individuals Who Are Blind program, which is federally funded. And a little bit later, you're going to hear from some folks from Department of Rehabilitation to tell you about how that end of the program works. But what we do essentially is provide services for folks who are 55 and over who are dealing with varying degrees of vision loss. And we have a number of delivery channels for those services. One, we provide in-home instruction. This is individualized instruction tailored to each person's individual needs. So we teach several skill sets, which includes orientation and mobility. So that's learning how to travel safely and efficiently, both in and out of the home. So for some folks, that can mean getting out to the mailbox and back safely and efficiently and with confidence, or it could mean getting on a plane, flying to Paris, France, and climbing to the top of the Eiffel Tower. It is really up to the individual. So we like to encourage folks to do whatever it is they need and want to do in their lives, and we individualize our approach according to each person. So orientation and mobility, the use of the long white cane, daily living skills, which includes food preparation, learning how to chop and slice produce without losing a finger, learning how to work around a hot range or an oven without getting burned, household cleaning, shopping, labeling and organization, personal finance, all of those details that can become difficult to do when a person loses vision become doable again, easily and efficiently, just learning some basic skills and techniques, and sometimes incorporating the use of some tools, some low-tech, some high-tech, and we try to expose folks to all the different possibilities so that they can make the choices that work best for them in their particular situations. We also teach adaptive technology, and this is an area that's just exploded in the last few years in terms of the technology that's available to allow folks dealing with vision loss to do so many things that were not previously possible. And this is probably the area where we've seen the biggest growth in demand for instruction in how to use adaptive software for the computers. So we're talking about software that allows folks with partial vision to magnify the image they're seeing on the screen, to enhance or adjust color so that it is more optimal for that person's eye condition. So to enhance the ability to see what's on the computer screen, or for folks who are no longer able to see what's on the screen, there are screen reading softwares that allow a person to control a computer simply by using keyboard commands and hearing what the computer tells them is on the screen. So it's that, it's more, it's software that would allow you to slap a document onto a scanner, such as a telephone bill or a newspaper article, and in 12 seconds in the touch of a button, it's being read out loud to the person. It's some pretty amazing stuff. And if I asked you, what do you think the most popular topic for discussion and for instruction is these days in terms of technology, does anyone have an idea of what that might be? What do you think people want to know most about these days in terms of adaptive technology? I heard it. I heard it over here, and I heard it over to my right here. iPhones, iPads. Anyone here have any of these devices? Okay, so if you are someone who's blind or vision impacted, you may know, if you have an iPhone or iPad, that they have some pretty amazing built-in capabilities, both magnification and color enhancement and screen reading. I have an iPhone in my pocket, and if I were to step outside of this hotel right now, and I'm not too familiar with this neighborhood, but I know that I can get from here, say, over to the Arden Fair Mall with very little difficulty because I have an app, a computer program for the iPhone or iPad or other smartphone or tablet computer. That app will tell me where I am at this moment. It'll give me the address, and as I walk down the street and up the road, it will tell me what address I'm passing as I walk by it. It's pretty amazing. It's accurate most times down to about 30 feet. Yeah, yeah, it's really been life-changing for me. And the greatest thing about this app, by the way, it's called iMove. And I do. I'm able to move faster and most importantly, more often than not, in the right direction, thanks to this simple free app. And it's that. It's free. It's made for the blind by the blind. Yeah, iMove. Download it this afternoon. You'll love it. This is one of hundreds, and every day that number is increasing, of apps that enable folks who are blind, vision impacted, to do all sorts of things that were not previously possible in this way. I have an app that will give me transit schedules. So again, if I step out of here after this conference today and want to catch an unfamiliar bus, this will tell me which buses pass by this neighborhood at what time. Again, that's another application that's free. I have a money reader, and it will tell me whether I'm holding a $20 bill, a $5 bill, a $1 bill. It'll read 6 foreign currencies, Deutschmarks, francs, lira. So wherever I go in the world, I'll know how much money I got in my hands. It's pretty amazing. There's lots more. Applications that will scan and read text on the spot. It'll read street signs, signs on the sides of buildings. Just a whole array of new technology that is not only accessible, but mobile. It goes with me everywhere I go. And it just goes on and on and on in terms of the capabilities of these new programs. So we've had a huge demand for not only information about where to get these applications and how to download them, but how to use the devices. This past week, I spent, I spent about 8 hours with 4 different clients teaching them how to use their iPads or iPhones. And that's just me. We have other instructors to do that as well. They go out in the people's homes to teach them how to use their devices. So we try to keep up with the times and to stay one step ahead of this marvelous technology so that folks who are blind and vision impacted can have immediate access to something that can really change their lives for the better in such terrific ways. Other services that we offer in the senior program include our monthly 8-day senior retreat, and that is an intensive training course in those skill sets I mentioned, the orientation of mobility, the daily living skills, the adaptive technology, also basic Braille, which is great if you find yourself in an elevator and want to know which floor is 5 versus 9. And labeling things like clothing. Braille clothing tags are terrific. They're little aluminum tags that have colors on them, brown, green, gray, plaid, stripes. I've got one in my shirt right now, and hopefully it's attached correctly and I'm wearing the color I think I'm wearing. Ah, excellent. I could have sworn it said white. You're saying purple? Oh, okay, all right. Okay, that's good to know. Purple's never been one of my best colors. Oh, I'll hold question for a moment because I want to. I would like to reserve a little bit of what's left of my time to answer questions you may have about any of the things I mentioned, including that one. I'll answer your question first in just a moment. Tell you a little bit more about our monthly 8-day retreat. We provide transportation for all participants. We pick them up from their homes, bring them to our facility on S and 13th downtown, and provide, as I say, this very intensive training in the orientation of mobility, the daily living skills, the adaptive technology, the Braille, so that at the end of 8 days, you've got folks who come in sometimes feeling frustrated, depressed, sad, angry about their loss of vision and feeling kind of hopeless about their abilities to carry on and do the things they need and want to do in their lives. And after 8 days, they're new people. They're transformed because they've learned the skills, the techniques, and they've acquired the tools to carry on with their lives, to keep doing the things they need and want to do despite their vision loss. So it's a terrific program. And we offer it once a month at Society for the Blind. Also, we have monthly outings where we take groups of folks on some pretty neat trips. In February, we took a group to the Mondavi Center at UC Davis, and we heard a string quartet concert and provided a picnic lunch. This month in March, we went to the Aerospace Museum down by Mather Air Force Base, and boy, folks really enjoyed that. They got to touch World War II fighter planes and helicopters and all kinds of neat stuff. Aircraft are very tactile, so that was a great activity for folks to get out and explore some things by touch and really enjoy that experience. In a couple weeks, we're going to go to an exhibit of a local blind artist, Mary Dignan. She does these amazing and beautiful ceramic mosaics that, again, they're not only colorful and beautiful to the eye, but they're tactile, and they just have all these textures and grooves and lines that enable the person who's touching them to get a picture in their mind of these landscapes and other things that she makes a part of her art. So we're going to do that in a couple weeks. So we've got some pretty neat things going on, fun stuff, interesting stuff, engaging activities for folks. And we also have specialty events that we hold every couple of months, workshops and seminars that are devoted to specific topics such as health and wellness. In February, we had a family and caregiver support workshop where we brought together family, loved ones, friends, caregivers of folks dealing with vision loss, because when an individual loses vision, it's not just that person that's affected, it's everyone around them. And sometimes the family, friends, loved ones, and others that are involved are just as frustrated and sad and angry about what's going on as the individual who's actually dealing with the vision loss. So this is an opportunity to come together and kind of do some brainstorming about how to deal with those kinds of issues to come up so everyone can cope better with the process of adapting to life with less or no vision. In June, we'll be having a recreation and leisure workshop. Folks will be able to come and learn about how to do yoga, how to do gardening, home maintenance, dancing. I think it's going to be country western dancing this time. And we'll, of course, have a workshop devoted to technology, iPhones and iPads again. And later on in the summer, in August, we'll be having a health and wellness seminar with a physical therapist from American River College. She'll be coming to do a talk on the importance of strength and balance in fall prevention. Yeah, because we've learned that maintaining muscle tone and flexibility in the legs and the feet and the ankles is critical to fall prevention. And it's really quite simple. In fact, in our daily, in our monthly retreats, we actually begin each instructional day with a little bit of calisthenics, a little bit of strength and balance exercise to kind of get folks warmed up and awake, but also make them more inclined to be able to walk with more confidence, balance, and less likely to fall. So that's a critical component of it as well. And also not only exercise, but also nutrition and diet, because that plays a part in the healthy lifestyle that we're trying to encourage as well. So as you probably can tell, there's quite a bit going on at Society for the Blind these days. We're really pleased that we're able to provide the kind of services that we can provide, that we have the resources and folks that are able to provide the kind of instruction that we do. And we also have a new CEO, Sherry Raisler. She's formerly was CEO of St. Anthony's Dining Room in San Francisco. That's an agency that feeds about 3,000 people a day, meals for the homeless. And she is now bringing her talents from there to us. We're really glad to have her, and she has some great vision for what the agency is going to look like over the next 10 years. So that's it in a nutshell. I'd like to give you guys the opportunity to ask some questions. And first, I'll answer the question that came from over here, which was, where do you get those clothing tags? Am I right? And I'll, the clothing tags you can get online from MaxiAids. LGS is another online place you can get them. They range in price, I think, from about $29 to $40, depending on where you get them. We also carry them at the AIDS to Independence store at Society for folks that just want to walk in and buy them off the shelf. Yes, sir.
I was told that an app is being created for the iPad to where you can go to the Bard site and download books right from Bard onto your iPad through iTunes.
Yeah. I've heard that as well, and
Well,
that's one of the things about the rapid change in the nature of the technology, and it has a lot of effects on a lot of things, including, you know, some devices become obsolete or they have to change radically to keep up in this market. I hope you're right about the ability to download onto your device from Bard. They are working on that. I think it has to do with Apple working out a deal with National Library Service.
Mm-hmm.
If I could interject.
Yes, please.
The program following ours, the CCCLB, one of the speakers is from the Braille and Talking Book Library in Sacramento, so he probably will know.
Terrific. The time for my portion of the program is almost up. Any other questions?
I have a quick question.
Yes, please. Yeah, good question. We have clients that are as far away as Redding, Chico, and as far south as Modesto, Turlock, Antioch. We serve folks up in Grass Valley, Nevada City area, Truckee, Arnold. So we have a pretty wide reach. We sometimes have folks that will come to our eight-day retreat. They will come and get a hotel or stay with family and friends in the area so they can participate in that. But for folks that are further out, we provide in-home instruction. So we'll send our instructors on the road, and we'll try to reach those folks and provide those same services I mentioned to that individual in that far-flung area.
Wonderful. And are those people also eligible for your telephone access service?
Yeah, anyone can access news from anywhere, essentially. All you need is a telephone and membership in the program.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, another question.
Uh-huh.
I wanted to ask, I come from Vista, where volunteers came in at Vista Center.
Yes.
Are you saying that everyone wants to know about the iPhones, but the seniors that we're seeing for low vision exams are way far away from iPhones?
Oh, in terms of, yeah. Right, right. Well, I think we're always intimidated by technology that's unfamiliar to us, and more so today as it's changing faster and faster. But I have to tell you, of those four folks that I mentioned that I worked with this past week and taught them how to use their iPads and iPhones. One is 78. She's actually a college professor at Sac City College and was terrified of her iPhone. It was a gift from her daughter, and it sat in a drawer for a year. Yeah, for the very reason that you mentioned. But I've been working with her for almost a year now on a fairly regular basis, and she's a whiz. And she loves it. So what it really comes down to is an individual's desire to learn how to use new technology. And it requires patience and, most importantly, willingness to practice every day. So it's no different than learning how to play piano or and I'll tell you, I'm more than happy to talk at more length with you about these devices and how it might be beneficial for you. So if you want to speak with me after the program, or you can get one of my cards and call me on the phone one day. Yeah, because these things are amazing, and I love getting people hooked up. Mm-hmm. What kind of things do you play? So do you play games?
I only downloaded one, which was the solitaire game, but you
Right. And I'll tell you, there are more and more games that are designed to be used with VoiceOver. VoiceOver, by the way, is the iPad, iPhone screen reader that lets you operate the phone by touch and listen. You don't need the screen on at all. You don't need to see a thing. One more question? Any more questions? Yes, sir.
You said that the iMove is a navigation device.
Yeah.
Is that in the App Store?
Yes.
Under iMove?
Yeah.
If did a search and I didn't see it there. So.
Get with me after the program. I'll help you find it.
Okay.
Yep. Great. Any other questions? Thanks, folks. I guess we better move on to the next speaker. Thanks so much.
Thank you so
much. Bonnie, here you go.
Oh, thank you. And I'll be quick.
Could I have your card, please?
Absolutely.
Yes, if you want a card from Shane, so we don't disrupt the meeting, maybe raise your hand, and maybe someone will help match Shane up with you to get you a card. And he'll probably leave a few with us, too. And I'm sorry we didn't get to acknowledge Anne with her guide dog here, who also came with... Okay. Well, we're glad you came as an observer. And, you know, I will remind all of us that when we hear about these, okay, maybe you don't live in Sacramento. Maybe you wonder why we talk about these programs. It's to give you an idea what can happen, what is fundable, what is doable, what you may want to advocate for in your own community. And these things take time and research and all that. But do remember that one of our big focal points here, as we'll come up with, learning about the Commission on Aging, which is accessible to all of us in California. If you know what's possible, you can know what to explore and what to look into and maybe is needed in your community or is accessible to the people that you run into that are floundering and maybe new at all this. So do keep that all in mind. Now, I would like to move on, and again, I apologize for the delay, which I am now contributing to. I'm a big picture person, and I really want us to get a bigger picture of, well, I heard about this agency, but I don't live near it, so what does it have to do with me? It has a lot to do with all of us. Carol Sewell is a program analyst with the California Commission on Aging, and I will not take up any more of her time.
Thanks so much for inviting me here, Bonnie. The commission, in general, is who she invited. I'm sorry, I'll get closer to the mic. I'm not good with mics. And the opportunity to help kind of disentangle the web that is aging services in the state of California. The Commission on Aging is a... Citizens Advisory Body established in the Older Californians Act to advocate for policies and programs that improve the lives of California. The commission is an independent entity. We are not the entity that delivers aging services, but we are in a role to advocate for work towards changes and improvements. We look at legislative issues, and we also monitor the development and delivery of programs around the state. So I'll try and give you an overview quickly of the commission and then try and explain the network of aging services that exists in the nation and here in California. The commission is a body that is made up of 25 unpaid volunteer appointees. The members are appointed by the governor, 19 appointments from the governor, and three from each house of the legislature. The only requirement of membership is that at least half of our members are over 60 or considered to be consumers of aging services. The commission holds 6 meetings a year. We try to meet at a range of locations throughout the state. We generally hold public hearings at each meeting, and our meetings are open to the public. As a state entity, we are charged with making sure that the public has access to everything that we do and can participate and comment in any hearings that we hold. The commission is funded with federal money solely. It's Older Americans Act money that's to us from the federal government through the Department of Aging. It's interesting because you may remember that last year, the year before, there were cuts in all the agencies to reduce state spending. And we actually were subject to those cuts, despite the fact that there were no state dollars in our budget. But because we show up in the state budget, because we're a project of essentially a program of the department is how it looks, we were subject to those cuts. Technically, we're an independent entity. We're not a part of the Brown administration. We're not a part of the Department of Aging. We are an advisory in that capacity. We have a little more leeway to to look at things in a more open and honest manner. The commission has worked on a range of issues over the years. I've been with the commission for 7 years now, and they we have sponsored a number of fairly major initiatives that I think have been of great import and maybe of interest. In 2005, before I came, the Schwarzenegger administration asked the Commission on Aging to help with screening of delegates to the White House Conference on Aging. The White House Conference on Aging is an event that theoretically happens every 10 years in Washington, D.C., brings together delegates from around the nation to talk about the delivery of aging services and needs that are not being met. The commission actually helped to screen those delegates. I believe there were 100 delegates that went in total, congressional delegates as well as the governor's delegates, and then did training to prepare those individuals to go back to D.C. at that time. The following year, the commission held a follow-up conference that looked at the outcomes of the Federal Conference on Aging and tried to identify what was most important from those outcomes for California. From that meeting, the commission went forward with two initiatives that were identified as the top priorities. One was to require that there be more cultural diversity training in the education of geriatricians and all other medical providers. We actually carried we started a resolution that went through the legislature and was approved that called on the medical schools around the state that are working in geriatrics to focus more on cultural diversity as our population becomes more and more culturally diverse. The other initiative that came out of that follow-up conference was a call to increase funding for senior housing, which is accessible housing. That, I believe, was the year that Prop 1C was passed on the state ballot that created a new housing bond and created new multifamily housing dollars. That bond was promoted under the idea that it would also create more senior housing. And so when the initiative was passed, the senior advocates discovered there was no assurance that that was going to take place. So we actually sponsored legislation that required the state to allocate a proportion of that multifamily housing money to senior housing in the same proportion that seniors were represented in the low-income population. That was quite a fight. The department didn't want to do it. But we worked with AARP and another organization called the Congress of California Seniors and several housing advocacy organizations, and we're able to get that passed. So that was a very exciting thing to succeed with. Other things that we have done include holding special hearings on mental health programs for seniors. Following the passage of Prop 63 that made money available for mental health services across the age span, there was quite a controversy over the commission that oversaw the delivery of that, basically saying that older adult services weren't important. And so the commission took a special interest in working to assure that older adult needs were recognized, that older adult mental health is highly at risk given the changes that people go through as they age, the loss and disability that everyone inevitably suffers. And we're successful in getting a special focus on prevention and early intervention for older adult programming. So we held several hearings on the delivery of those services and then eventually sponsored legislation that help to train mental health therapists and other mental health counselors, other categories, in working with victims specifically of elder abuse. Because another thing that we focused on is the fact that elder abuse is a growing crime, and victims of elder abuse suffer significant mental harm. And even victims of financial abuse have a very hard time emotionally addressing the prospect of going forward with the losses they've suffered. So these are some of the things that we've done. We've also done several large forums, statewide forums on senior centers, because as you may know, senior centers are a primary focal in communities for delivery of a wide range of aging services. And your comment straight ahead of me regarding the use of apps and older adults, that's exactly one of the topics we addressed in the first Senior Center Forum in 2009 was, how do you meet the needs of the current senior population while you're becoming relevant for the boomer population? Because boomers are different. And boomers are becoming more tech savvy, and boomers are more inclined to want more of these things, toys. Toys, yes. I'm at the tail end of that group, so count me in. We had a wonderful forum. We actually had co-sponsorship from the National Council on Aging for that event. We brought a senior center researcher from Fordham University, who is one of the foremost researchers in the nation. And we had 300 people come to Sacramento. The commission is authorized in state law to raise money, and so we were able to put that forum on at no cost to attendees, which was wonderful. And brought people together to really look at the issue of, you know, how do you change? How do you stay relevant in a changing world with demographic changes and age changes and funding changes as well? In 2011, we did a second forum. That event was held in LA. I think we had about 200 people there. It actually happened to fall on the same day as a major senior center luncheon that was being held by the LA Department of Aging, same day. And so it was amazing. So we lost quite a number of local directors at that time. But the second forum was really focused on looking at the issues of funding and survival at a time when the budgets were being cut. And we saw senior center directors who helped plan the first forum who were laid off by the forum. So a lot of hard things, but a lot of inspiration. And those were very successful events and were real inspirational, I think, to a lot of people. We tried to give them a lot of good information. At present, we're in the middle of an initiative on elder abuse that's multifaceted. And we are working on legislation, dealing with financial elder abuse, making sure that victims of elder and dependent adult financial abuse, which is the actual wording of the penal code section, are eligible to receive assistance through the state's Victims Compensation Fund. Currently, that fund only provides help to victims of violent crimes or their family members or witnesses, but not to victims of this particular crime, which is a violent crime when you lose all of your assets or you lose your home and your source of income. So we are working to move forward. We've gotten great support from a wide range of organizations, including some district attorney's offices and law enforcement and a number of aging advocates. And so we're very excited about that. Along with that, we're planning a summit for later this year that will be an invitation-only, very high-level summit to focus on elder abuse policy in the state and to look at issues of duplicative laws and gaps in the laws that make it very hard to actually go in and intervene and prosecute and address this problem head on. So we're excited about that. We're working with a number of organizations. One of the things that we've done is really try to identify good partners in the activities that we've engaged in. In fact, Teddy Joy, you may remember that the commission worked with Silk when you were president on a number of issues. We try to meet with the Silk every 2 years, the State Independent Living Council, for those of you who don't know. And we held a hearing about 5 years ago on accessible housing, and from that produced a brief, a housing, accessible housing brief in partnership with the Silk that really looks at the issues that need to be addressed for every person who needs accessible housing and policies and changes that should be made. The last hearing that we held with the Silk was on financial abuse of elders and dependent adults, and that actually led to the legislation that we are currently working on now, dealing with the Victims Compensation Fund. So that's another exciting thing that the commission does. Another statutory role of the commission is to monitor the state plan on aging. And that leads me into telling you a little more about the structure of aging services in California. The commission and the state Department of Aging are funded with Older Americans Act money, which is federal dollars that is designated for specified federal programs to be delivered around the nation. Part of the requirement for that delivery is that it's done with input from an advisory body of consumers. That's where the Commission on Aging gets its authorization. There are also local bodies that look at the delivery of aging services on a local level. The State Department of Aging administers those funds and oversees programs. And I have a long list here, and since I don't work with them daily, I thought I would bring it, and I will read and try and explain as I go through. The programming is delivered through a local area agency on aging. Are you, all of you familiar with the, with your local area agency on aging? There are 33 of them in the state. They're, the areas are called planning service areas, and they're designated by population and geography. And they provide these services throughout their region. One of the primary services that they provide is information and assistance, which is basically to help identify when people call what services the area agency provides that are a benefit, or to help direct them onward to another service provider that could be beneficial, possibly the Society for the Blind, the Independent Living Center, other organizations. We really try to do a collaborative effort. The area agencies on aging provide nutrition services, which include the congregate meal programs that are offered at senior centers for everyone over 60 at no cost, and for persons with disabilities, and home-delivered meals, which you might know as the Meals on Wheels program. The nutrition programs also provide nutrition education to help assure that the seniors that are being served are getting the information they need to make good decisions about food on their own. The Department of Aging administers the Community-Based Adult Services Program, which you may have known as the Adult Day Healthcare Program, to provide services for frail and quite often cognitively disabled adults who are not able to stay at home alone but have a situation where they can be cared for at home in the evenings by family. That program has been significantly reduced in recent years due to funding and changes in the eligibility requirements, but still is a critical program that provides important services. The department and the local agencies administer family caregiver support programs, which include counseling and guidance, support groups, training for family caregivers who are working with an elder or another form of individual who is at home and impaired. I think the program actually began for brain impaired individuals, but it's gone much farther than that now. Also, some respite care is available so people can get a chance to get out and get a breather, because we all know family caregiving is very, very challenging. The HICAP program is a program that's available through every area agency on aging. It's the Health Insurance Counseling and Advocacy Program, and it's a program of trained volunteers that can advise you on what Medicare benefits or what Medicare programming is available to you. And you may all know that Medicare has gotten more and more complicated through the years. And now there's Part D and Part C. And my boss, who ran an area agency for years, didn't even know what Part C was when I was signing my mother up for it. It's brand new. So it is very complicated. So the HICAP is an essential service that really is helping people make good decisions about what kind of benefits they should be signing up for in Medicare. The area agencies also administer the Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program, which is a program that trains volunteers to go into nursing homes on a regular basis and advocate for residents. In California, the Long-Term Care Ombudsman volunteers actually are designated as mandated reporters, which means that they are charged with reporting to law enforcement any elder abuse that they suspect. They do some investigative work. They do partnering with law enforcement under new regulations that just went into effect. And it's an essential program. They have access to every nursing home, every community care facility where care is being provided. And their main charge really is to try and resolve problems before they get to the court. So one of their roles is to get to know the residents and to really work with people and gain their confidence so they can hear what's going on. It's a vital program and amazing pool of volunteers who go through the training and are dedicated to these frail nursing home residents. It's just a wonderful program. Legal services for seniors are also made available through the area agencies on aging. I should clarify that almost all of these programs are done on a contract basis. So you can't go to the area agency on aging and find all of these, but they handle the contracts for the delivery of these services throughout their areas. So there are a lot of health and wellness programs that are offered, chronic disease self-management, Alzheimer's programs. There are programs dealing with brain fitness, and there's a new program that just was developed out of the Los Angeles City Area Department of Aging, which is the area agency on aging there, that was done in partnership with Microsoft, and it's called ExerGamers, and it involves an Xbox, and it's an award-winning program. So that's one of the great things about the Older Americans Act. It allows the local agencies to develop programs that are appropriate for their particular constituencies. So LA has the opportunity to do this kind of a partnership and develop something amazing. It may not be a good fit elsewhere. There is a small senior employment program that is run out of the area agencies on aging. It's called the CSEP, Senior Community Employment Program, I believe, that offers retraining and job counseling for older adults who need to either re-enter the workforce or are forced into a job shift. It's a small program. I think its funding may be in jeopardy right now at the federal level, but it has been something that a lot of people have relied on over the years. Other programs that are offered through the area agencies include peer counseling, called the Retired Senior Volunteer Program, where people actually go out and advise and help others. Sometimes it's just a visit to a homebound elder. They do a lot of fall prevention programming, and there are what we call evidence-based fall prevention programs that have been developed that are offered throughout the senior centers with this funding. Many area agencies offer programs to train older drivers or help them figure out if their car actually works for them. I understand that quite often you'll find a very tiny little frail lady driving up in an enormous Cadillac. She can barely see over the dashboard. And if they're able to determine that she really could still drive, they can help her with some seat adjustments and help her maybe raise the seat or change the mirrors. Really, they call that the car fit program, which is a pretty amazing thing when you think about it. You know, you sit in that car for 20 years and you don't think you've changed, but you have. And that's a safety feature for all of us, knowing that that's been being done. So, yeah, we all have to appreciate that either way. And there's also some consultation about when it's time to not drive and helping family members to work through that with their older adult loved one, because that's a pretty hard thing to give up to. You may know or may be experiencing the phenomenon of grandparents raising grandchildren. And there are programs administered through the area agencies on aging that specifically provide assistance to these individuals who have taken on a whole new life at a time when they probably never expected it. That involves counseling, support, respite care, and additional services that are critical to these individuals. The whole focus of these programs is helping an older adult to stay in the community for as long as they possibly can, helping to make it possible for you to stay in your home. There are a number of community-based long-term care services. There are programs that make home care available, not health care, but someone who can come in and help clean the house or help with shopping or get you to medical appointments, help make up those things that an older adult maybe is no longer able to do on their own. The program also provides funding for elder rights protection, and there's been elder abuse funding in both the Older Americans Act from the federal government, as well as the Affordable Care Act. The president's health care reform actually funded the Elder Justice Act for the first time. And those are programs that, again, help elders in nursing homes understand their rights, as well as help to develop programming for elder abuse prevention and response. Some other programs are Medicare Patrol, which is a program to train volunteers to identify Medicare fraud and help to prevent fraud. And there is a pool of individuals in the community that are working in that capacity. In some states and some areas, there is more senior center funding available through the area agencies on aging. That is something that is supported through the Older Americans Act. California doesn't do a lot of that direct support for senior centers, but the funding that they provide for programming essentially translates into support for senior centers. That's all right. Bonnie has a question. We are. Okay. Yes, that number takes you into your local area agency on aging and the information and assistance line. Yes, the number is 800-510-2020. And anywhere you call from, it will take you into that area's Area Agency on Aging. Now, quite often we get calls from people who are trying to find the Area Agency for their mother in L.A., and they're calling me from Anna. And I have to give them the direct line, which we have. And we do make a lot of referrals because we get a lot of calls. Yes.
Hi, I'm Gigi DeMarie, and you mentioned a couple of legislative bills.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'd love that. Thank you. Yes, the elder abuse bill that the commission is sponsoring is SB 6060, and that's dealing with the Victims Compensation Fund. Yeah. Which one? We'll talk afterward, and maybe I'll trigger a memory.
Another quick question. I just really do apologize.
It's all right.
So great.
It's all right.
If someone, for example, wanted to explore the possibility of applying to be on this commission as a volunteer, or they want to know more in more detail about any of the many things that you mentioned, all the big picture stuff, would be a couple of the best ways, either phone number, website, for them to get more information in this big, wonderful, but large entity?
Okay. Well, the Commission on Aging has a website, and all of our meetings and agendas and other reports are posted there. The website is www.ccoa.ca.gov. Now, if you want to know about the World of Aging Services, then you want to go to the Department of Aging's website, and that is aging. It used to be DOA, and they decided that DOA wasn't good. Thank you. Yes, aging.ca.gov. Yeah. And if you'd like to know of federal initiatives, the website for the Federal Administration on Aging is www.aoa, that's O not zero, .gov. And just a quick one thing that makes this such an exciting time to be talking to you is that there was a recent change at the federal level, and now the Federal Administration on Aging is under a larger umbrella organization called the Administration for Community Living, which is really focused on helping to, address the issues that everyone faces. Everyone gets older. Everyone ends up with one or another form of disability. And the focus is how do we keep people in community and identify the common programs that we can use to strengthen opportunities and make better use of dollars as they're scarce. So that's,
yes. I have a quick comment for all of you, and then I have a very quick question.
That's fine.
But as I was walking in here, I was looking at passing some younger people that had some electronic equipment.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to know about this Part C. Where can we find more information about Part C?
Oh, Part C is the Medicare Advantage plans, and that's where you get your Medicare services through an HMO, and it actually there's a higher copay, or a higher premium, but you get a broader range of services. And if you go to Medicare.gov, you can read about it, www.medicare.gov. Yeah. So thank you.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay.
you. I know we're, and oh, we could have gone on with all of our presenters. I would just hasten us to say that these issues are things, as we heard about change last night and how important it is, that we and our seniors committee especially really have to get more involved in. So I hope that some of these websites, I'm hoping this is successfully recorded and will eventually be up on the website. I can't tell you when. You know how that goes. If you have any difficulty following up, I know we got through a lot of letters and .coms and .govs thrown at you. Call the office. Have them track me down before July. And I'll do. If someone calls specifically, I'll do my best to get the information to you if you need that. Otherwise, you know, that's get your iPhone out and go on the web quickly, they say. Now, and I apologize for the limited time. Our older blind program, which we're all familiar with and know how important it is, Joe, and I'll let them decide how they want to do this. Thank you.
Thank you, and I'm going to walk back over here where my notes are. Just as I'm doing that, you know, the youth that make that comment, I often remind them to be nice to seniors because they're headed that way. Okay, real briefly, and some of you may have heard some of this yesterday, but one of the things that I really wanted to let everybody here know is, of course, and Bonnie recognizes at the outset that Joe Smith has graciously come back yet again to assist us with the OIB program. He retired, we say not yet. So hopefully we'll keep him busy for another while we recruit for that. Jay Harris, who had been hired into the position, took a promotion, and so he is now the chief of our independent living section. Just a couple of just a couple of quick updates here, and before I forget, Joe brought for all of you a list of our grant agencies. We have both Braille and large print copies, and of course, if you need e-copies, I'm sure we can get that out as well. So we can pass those out before everybody leaves. We do have 24 service areas, 24 grants that are provided through 17 agencies, and so Shane talked about Sex Society. There are similar organizations in other places throughout the state. And no, not every county is being served yet. I mentioned yesterday the 7OB report. For those of you who are interested in how the services and the outcomes of those services by the 17 agencies, 24 grants, there is a report that is sent to the Rehabilitation Services Administration annually. And that report has been published. It is on our DOR website. And, you know, very grateful to all of our partners out of the community for the services they provide, for the work that they do, and for getting those information to us on time so we could submit those reports on time. So thank you. The other thing, there's a major initiative that we have underway. I touched base on this yesterday. I'll touch base on it very briefly here. And then I'm going to turn this over to Joe to provide any more detail. We'll take a couple of questions if you have. And that is the initiative is to establish service areas. And essentially it would be, you know, right now we're looking at county as being a service area. And then to establish a methodology that will distribute the funding into each of the service areas and then within the service areas. And particularly in these times where resources decrease, frankly, we've had one increase, which was the ERA funding. When that might happen again, who knows? But there is the need for us to have a methodology that allows to expand and contract the funding with equity when it does take place, as well as to try and provide as broad a service within the state as we can. And let's all acknowledge we don't get enough money, and we know that. And maybe one day Congress and everybody else will see it fit to increase those services. Let me also talk real briefly about the sequestration, because those of you who were at the general session last night, you heard Tony, our director, say that it's something that nobody ever thought would take place, but sequestration is a fancy term for reduction. And so we are anticipating, and this certainly could be adjusted, but we're anticipating a 5% reduction in the funding to our older individuals who are blind program. We have already engaged with our providers. We wanted to give them as much notice as we could so they have the opportunity to plan and to handle any of those reductions within their specific grants. And so they're busily doing that. And once we have those final numbers, we'll obviously be working with the agencies to amend their grants. I'm not going into a lot of the detail about the actual services. I think Shane did a good job of covering that in his presentation, so I don't think you guys would like us to repeat that. But let me just hand this over to Joe, and he can provide any additional details that you guys would like, or if you have questions, we can do that too. So,
yeah, thank you. It's good to be here again. I've been here several times over the years, and Bonnie's always so gracious, a leader on this group. I hope she stays. I don't know what that meant after July. You know, I'm not sure what that meant, but I've been with the Older Blind Program for several years now, and we administer the contracts, and we go out and do reviews on the services and the billings and things like that, and I must say all the agencies, the 17 agencies throughout California, really do a great job, and myself as a senior or trying to become a retired senior one of these days, but I must say, I always try to support the agencies in my area. And you folks, if you have the ability to support agencies in your area, you know, on the last annual report, based on the dollar figure that went out to these folks, they served over 7,000 people, seniors. That's 55 years and older. And over 50% of those seniors were over the age of 80. And I think there was about 35 that were over the age of 100 that were served. Yeah, Joe's age, over 100, about 35 of those folks. So there's some great services being done out there. But they averaged about $460 per consumer served over that last year. And that's not a lot of money. And if these agencies are having fundraisers or things like that, I'd like to see everybody. I'd like to encourage everybody to try to help support those agencies because they put a lot of their own dollar. The money that comes from the feds is about $3.2 million, and if you divide that into over 7,000 people being served, that's not a lot of money per person. So I just want to encourage everybody to look at that. Typically, the people served throughout the state, about two-thirds of them, usually from two-thirds to 70%, are all women. I don't know why that is, but I think sometimes men, they rather just stay home and watch the football game or something maybe. But that's a little bit of mine, and I'm back now. I'll be working a lot on this new funding process and the new RFA that will be going out for the 2014 year. So if you have any questions, just give me a call sometime. And we did hand out all the contact information for you for the 17 agencies throughout California. Thank you.